Now, another new translation of the Book of Genesis. Robert Alter, a biblical and Hebraic scholar at Berkeley, has written a majestic translation of the first book of the Bible, complete with commentary. There is a tone of majesty to Alter's English because, as he explains in his introduction, biblical Hebrew, to the ears of the ancient Israelites, was already a literary language, unlike and older than everyday speech. So Robert Alter strives for a level of language that is not everyday English. An example he gives of his choice of words comes in the story of Noah and the flood.
When the flood begins, there's a line of poetry, and in my translation it reads as follows. All the wellsprings of the great deep burst, and the casements of the heavens were opened. Now, the crucial choice for me in that little line, as a microscopic example, is casements. The King James Version says windows, which is accurate semantically. The modern translations that I've looked at tend to say something like sluice gates or floodgates were opened, which is translating by context something that I sternly oppose. The Hebrew is a word that appears only two other times in the whole Bible, but it clearly means a window or a window-like niche. So all indications are that this was a specialized poetic word and very old-fashioned at the time that it was used. So I opted for casements, which reminds you of Keats, reminds you of Shakespeare, and so forth.
So if a critic were to say, but the verse uses a word that might seem, out of the experience of just any reader of Scripture at that moment, you would say, yes, that's right. It should be a little bit beyond everyday experience.
Exactly. The function of these poetic insets, I think, is to impart, a kind of loftiness, a sense of the very literary in the midst of the narrative prose flow.
Now, you also address a problem in translating Genesis, which is that very often there are passages in the Hebrew, in this biblical Hebrew, as you write, in which phrases are linked together just by the connective and, or in Hebrew, the.
Right.
And what do you do with that? What do you do when you have many groups of words in sequence that are strung together with ands?
Well, what I have decided to do is follow it as scrupulously as possible. Let's follow the chain of ands that you have in the Hebrew. And I have a couple of reasons for doing this. See, the general practice of modern translations, especially the ones done by ecclesiastical committees, say, well, people don't talk like this anymore. If you read the New York Times, it doesn't read that way. So let's repackage the syntax of all these biblical sentences. But that is not the way the biblical writers organized the world in story. They were very artful and very sophisticated, as indeed, say, a 20th century writer like Hemingway does as well, in seeing that there was something to be gained by stringing the story out in ands. And there's also a certain rhythm, which is very important for me in translating, in the repetition of the ands.
You give the example of a verse or two describing Rebecca at the well.
Right. Rebecca is performing this rather astonishing act that I want to remind people of. She's watering or bringing up water from the well for 10 camels and figure about 25 gallons per camel. So she is a very purposeful young woman indeed. And this is the way I think it sounds in the Hebrew, and I've tried to catch this in my English. And she said, "Drink, my lord." And she hurried and lowered her jug onto her hand and let him drink. And she let him drink his fill and said, "For your camels too I shall draw water until they drink their fill." And she hurried and emptied her jug into the trough, and she ran again to the well to draw water and drew water for all his camels, and so forth.
And.
Right. That is because you have a whole series of sequence actions, one after the other, linked by and, you get a sense here of this young woman flinging herself into kind of blur of action, down to the well, back up to the camels, down to the well, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. In many instances, it seems to me, as you were translating, given the choice of maintaining a very familiar phrase or abandoning it in the interest of novelty, you're not afraid to stick with the familiar one, that man shall work by the sweat of his brow, for example. You're not engaging in translation here simply to remove old phrases that we're familiar with.
The benchmark for all English versions of the Bible is the King James Version, and I must put a plug in for the predecessor of the King James Version, William Tyndale in 1525. There are times when it seems to me the Tyndale King James Version had it exactly right, like, "Am I my brother's keeper?" It's perfectly faithful to the Hebrew. The rhythm is nice and so forth. Why tamper with it? It's become proverbial in English. If I felt that the King James Version had it wrong, firmament at the beginning of the first chapter of Genesis, well, I guess it's become an established English word. I wonder whether it wasn't invented by the King James translators. So I thought about this, and I decided on vault, the vault of the heavens, since vault of the heavens is a poetic designation of the sky and is an architectural notion, is pretty well established in our own poetic tradition.
I wonder if you could read for us a passage that that you're particularly pleased with as its translator.
Okay, well, why don't I do the beginning of the story of the stealing of the blessing by Jacob. "And it happened when Isaac was old that his eyes grew too bleary to see. And he called to Esau, his elder son, and said to him, 'My son.' And he said, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Look, I have grown old. I know not how soon I shall die. So now, take up, pray, your gear, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field, and hunt me some game, and make me a dish of the kind that I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, so that I may solemnly bless you before I die.' And Rebekah was listening as Isaac spoke to Esau, his son. And Esau went off to the field to hunt game to bring. And Rebekah said to Jacob, 'Her son, look, I have heard your father speaking to Esau, your brother, saying, "Bring me some game and make me a dish that I may eat, and I shall bless you in the Lord's presence before I die. So now, my son, listen to my voice, to what I command you. Go pray to the flock, and fetch me from there two choice kids, that I may make them into a dish for your father of the kind he loves. And you shall bring it to your father, and he shall eat, so that he may bless you before he dies."
Robert Alter, reading from his new translation of the Book of Genesis.